Well, thank you for that introduction. Today, our guest is Ms. Sabrina Hake, principal for Hake Law Group. Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Carl. It's very nice to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
So, Sabrina, I know you're interested in helping legacy cities for their own green utilities. When did you come up with this concept?
Well, it's sort of evolved over time, but Gary, Indiana, and Northwest Indiana in general have a pretty poor air quality rating. And as we researched what was the cause of, you know, some of the emissions and some of the other issues, I realized that there's such a significant difference in your life expectancy depending on where you live, and it's all related to pollution. So one of the charts that we came across showed that a 10-mile difference in where you live can make a 33-year difference in your life expectancy. Even when you control for factors such as homicides and violence, the difference is significant.
Mm-hmm.
So as I looked at the demands for racial justice sort of coinciding with the demands to address climate change, it just occurred to me to put them together. And the idea of letting legacy cities establish their own green utilities just seems like a win-win in terms of advancing the economies of legacy cities and racial justice for the primarily black and brown citizens who live there with fighting climate change. So it just seems like a very elegant way to combine the two.
Sure. So what is the objective and purpose of legacy cities off the grid?
The objective is to allow legacy cities throughout the country to set up their own utilities on land that they already own that'll be powered by primarily wind and solar, which, of course, belongs to everyone. You know, the president-elect Biden has said that he wants to decarbonize the U.S. electricity grid by 2035, and a lot of the industry leaders are in agreement with that. So the objective is to, at this point, while the country is transitioning to green energy, to make sure that black and brown communities are not left out of that transition, and specifically to let legacy cities establish their own green utilities on land that they already own. If you look at the land mass, just sticking with Gary, which I love Gary because I live there,
mm-hmm.
but just using that as an example, Gary has 52 square miles of land mass. When you compare that to some of the more affluent cities in the region like Munster, Chesterton, et cetera, where we're talking about 9, 10, and 11 square miles, you see that Gary has an excess of land mass. When I looked at the other legacy cities, Gary's at 52, Detroit's at 142, Baltimore's at 92, and Cleveland's at 82. So those are large pockets of land that could be utilized to generate green energy. And there are prototypes and engineers' calculations that look at how much land you need to generate enough electricity for your entire city. And in Gary's case, it's less than 2 square miles.
Wow.
So it's a remarkable way to deliver clean energy, clean up the air in over 50 legacy cities, and deliver economic restitution to those cities at the same time.
So what is your plan, and is there a timeline on this?
Well, right now, so there are a lot of different legs. When you're talking about advancing a national proposal like this, of course, there are different components. At this point, we are in the public information stage, where I'm doing things like reaching out to the public. This interview is part of it. We'll have a website presence, and I've been doing a lot of online outreach to environmental groups. And that the first phase of this is just to raise consciousness, raise awareness of mm-hmm. the concept. Where it goes from there depends on what some of the reaction is. I mean, ideally, we would have a coming together of all these concerns and have a legislative push to allow legacy cities to establish their own utilities. If that doesn't happen, then there are more punitive measures that are possible, but I'm hoping not to go down that route. But I believe that the evidence of environmental racism is now clear and compelling. We not just on the life expectancies, but we know that COPD, lung disease, heart disease, et cetera, are directly traceable to the chemicals that are emitted through our air and water, through heavy industry, and through coal-fired plants. You can use that data to drive change through a national class action if that becomes necessary, because you can show an unequal protection claim where, as I said earlier, show a difference in life expectancy and a higher rate of disease in those communities. And it's also part of the reason the comorbidities to COVID have led to such a higher death rate in Black Americans than white Americans, because they have these comorbidities that are driven in large part by pollution.
I see.
So I think there's a kind of a carrot stick approach, and right now we're with the carrot, hoping that that develops and we don't have to look at the long term mass action. But I believe it's ripe for one and could certainly happen.
So what about steel mills and industry in Northwest Indiana? Do you have any plans to include them?
Well, steel is now being made with hydrogen and solar power and wind power exclusively. It's happening in Arizona and in Missouri. And so I believe that if we can encourage the steel mills to adopt, for example, a solar assembly line, mm-hmm. if Indiana Steel would go into manufacturing turbines or the steel components of some of the solar components, they would have enough money to completely install a solar assembly line. And wouldn't it be wonderful to help the steel mills to transition to solar? Because they're doing it in Europe. They're doing it in other countries where in 10 years, if we don't keep up with that development, then we're going to be behind the eight ball in terms of the cost. If you assume that the cost of production of steel, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think it's a ballpark, if it ranges somewhere between 10 and 22% of the overall production cost, well, we're going to lose that competitive advantage if we are still using fossil fuels to develop steel when other countries are now doing it with alternative energy. So mm-hmm. it's partly a way to protect U.S. steel by helping them to transition to wind and solar power.
So how much of an impact would this type of project have on our area?
Oh, it'd be tremendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, Gary, I would like to see Gary have the ability to establish his own green utility. We would then be transitioning to wind and solar very quickly. Now, I know that NIPSCO has announced its plans to retire its coal-fired plants by 2028. This would probably be in line with that in terms of the timeline. It would probably take about 10 years to get this going. But the air quality would be immediate. The improvement to the air quality would be immediate.
So how can our listeners learn more about this proposal, Sabrina?
I'd be happy to talk to anyone about it. I'd be happy to send out a written proposal to them so they can see the details. And you can always reach out to me at my firm, which is HaakeLawGroup@gmail.com. Haake is H-A-A-K-E, lawgroup@gmail.com. I'd give the site for the Legacy Cities Off the Grid, but it's not up yet. So
okay.
Don't want to do that prematurely.
Well, very interesting information, Sabrina, and that will do it for today's edition of Green Fleet Radio. Thank you again to Sabrina Haake, principal for Haake Law Group. Green Fleet Radio airs three times each Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Carl Lissick. Thanks for joining us. Remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy.